going on, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets powered by FTN right here on Game Plus Network. Chris Meany hanging out with you. A lot to get to here on the program. If you are watching live at our FTN Network YouTube page, a friendly reminder, if you can smash the like button, that would go a long way keeping this show around. If you have any comments, any questions, you can leave them there as well. We do have some giveaways, not today, but next week. So make sure you're subscribed to our FTN Network YouTube page. If you have any questions, of course, I mean, you can leave them there. Always circle back before first pitch on the main slate around the diamond. We are going to touch base a little bit later on in the show. I get some MLB props and some picks. We're going to continue our NFL team previews. Now we are turning our attention to the Super Bowl, not the Super Bowl champs, the Super Bowl favorites, the Buffalo Bills, right? The Buffalo Bills are Super Bowl favorites, and they have a lot to there's a lot to like from their squad from a fantasy football perspective, right? Josh Allen is going as quarterback one. He has been QB one in each of the past two seasons. Stephon Diggs is going as a top five wide receiver. Dawson Knox is going as a top 10 tight end. He had a really good campaign last year. And Gabriel Davis is really just picking up steam. So we'll talk about the Buffalo Bills from a fantasy perspective as well as a betting perspective. And of course, it could be all over tonight for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Game 5 happening in Colorado this evening. We're going to break down that game. Dango Bazzelli was live yesterday. And if you missed it, it is up on our FTN Network YouTube page. Myself and Eric Young, we rolled through the entire game, just kind of broke it down, some statistics, looked at some 5-5 numbers, and really just kind of gave our best props. But I have a couple for you. Actually, I have a couple, just single props. It's really tough. It's been tough to attack just single shot props. I think a couple we hit as singles in game 4, like Corey Perry, I think is in play again around minus 120 for two shots. Anthony Cirelli is a little bit more juice than that, but, you know, two shots. Don't expect to see Braden Point tonight. Maybe he's active. Maybe he can go a little bit with it, you know, being a do or die. I don't know, guys, if you guys are hanging out with us. Mark Carr in the house. What's up, dude? And maybe I haven't seen anything this morning that's looking like he's going to play or suit up. So that is not great news for Tampa, but from a shot prop standpoint, a production standpoint, ice time for Cirelli, top power play time for Corey Perry. We've been riding him now. He's had at least two shots in three straight games, and he's been plus money, you know, to hit the score sheet. It may be all over tonight for Tampa. Selfishly, I hope it's not. I really do. I mean, we have the series going 6 in the bet tracker. We'll just see. We'll see how it plays out, but it doesn't look good for Tampa Bay. It's going to be tough for them to win three straight games against this Colorado team, but we'll dive into all of that in a little bit. I do have a couple parlays for you as well. They're courtesy of FanDuel. We've been having some success with this, you know, just the 2-plus shots or the 3-plus shots for certain guys, but I think, you know, things that we've been saying here on this show and on Dangle Bazzelli just continue to ride those two Colorado players in Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, who combined for 30 shot attempts in game 4 and 88 in the 4-game series. Unbelievable stuff. Daily Handle in the house as well. What's up, dude? Should be a tight game tonight. And then Mark Carr comes in with the end. Come on, Tampa, push to 7. I agree. Like, as hockey fans, we got to see it. Hopefully we can see a little bit more. But I think everybody agrees with your first comment on how maybe Bancaro, if you put some money on him. I saw that he went down, fell all the way down to 9-1 FanDuel Sportsbook in Canada. I think, you know, closer to the draft, it was like 3-1 I saw. And, you know, Waj tweets out what he thinks is going to be the top 3 picks. And then, you know, just wasn't the case. So Bancaro out of Duke, Orlando number 1, Holmgren, OKC number 2. OKC, of course, had a few picks inside the top 12. And then Jabari Smith, who I really like, I think has the most upside in this draft class to Houston. But we have our guy Zach Graham, a.k.a. Quisenberg DFS. Always love chopping up with Zach. He's a super, super sharp basketball mind. So he's going to drop by in a couple, you know, blocks, and we're going to dive into some of the picks, you know, the winners, the losers, maybe some surprising picks, guys that he thinks maybe could fly under the radar, fantasy relevant in year 1 from a basketball standpoint. I might ask him some dynasty questions for those that are, you know, still playing fantasy basketball season long. But Zach is absolutely super sharp when it comes to DFS. And those that know Zach, you're well aware of his DFS game. And plus, like, he's a super intelligent. We can maybe dive into some, just, I don't think we'll get too much into NBA futures, because I don't think really yesterday we saw anything that was super impactful. I don't know. I'll ask Zach. I don't think that there's like a complete game changer or franchise type player from this draft class. I think there's a lot of good players with some upside, but we'll dive into that as well. So two Canadians, those north of the border, Anthem Sports and Entertainment. What's up? Game Plus Network. Two Canadians go inside the top 10. We had Benedict Mathurin, of course, to Indiana, and then Shaedon Sharpe to Portland. And the last time we saw two Canadians go inside the top 10 was 2014, right? Stauskas and, of course, Andrew Wiggins, who is now an NBA champion and partied up. He did. Did anyone see the pics of Wiggins? Good on Andrew Wiggins. It looked like he was having a good time with the Warriors. So we'll dive into all of that here off the top. I do want to give a plug to the Fantasy Football Platinum Game Plan package, which will be released next week. And you see there everything that it includes, 300 player profiles, auction values, top rookies, cheat sheets, advanced stats, rankings for all major fantasy football formats. Talking single quarterback leagues, super flex, tight end premium, where you got to start two tight ends. Who plays in those leagues? Are you kidding me? But we take care of you. And Jeff really does take care of you. He's put in a lot of work. I've seen a sneak peek of this. It is absolutely fantastic. It is so darn awesome. And then you know, shout out to our guy George, who's been, you know, getting it all together, and look for it early next week. My rankings are up on the website. We got best ball rankings up on the website. A lot of articles, a lot of content already. Risers, fallers, breakouts, sleepers, fades, high stakes stuff. It's all there over at ftnfantasy.com, and it's going to continue to come out over at ftnfantasy.com. We'll be with you throughout the entire season. Of course, Jeff has weekly rankings. He was the number one ranker last year over at Fantasy Pros, and we will just have all kinds of content throughout the season. Projections, tools, start and sit stuff, split tools. We've got a lot. We got like 40-plus advanced stats tools over at ftnfantasy.com. You can get lost for days. I was actually looking at it last weekend and just getting, I was just like, man, like, it's just so much cool info. Little things that you don't really think about, first read stuff, you know, which quarterback is looking, you know, who's the guy that he's looking at the first read. Some of it's pretty obvious. You know, last year with Rodgers and Adams, is Adams going to be Derek Carr's first read? Probably. I would assume so. They're very familiar with each other. But as we talked about yesterday with Joe Piazzapia, Hunter Renfrow, maybe just wide open 24/7, a terrific route runner. But we'll dive into all that stuff. Like I said, we got the Bills, Alex Galvin in there. Shout out to George the GOAT. Absolutely. George PTP GOAT as well. Guys are giving him props, and it's warranted. Absolutely. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to dive into the just a couple of NFL news items. Actually, off the top, if you wanted to go with this, Tyler, we did have it from George. Speaking of George, I think he's on the links today. Maybe he's, you know, putting for pars. Three putts for pars? I don't know, dude. Like, hit a couple of birdies out there. What do we got? We got Liv, right? Yeah. I mean, we mentioned this the other day. I guess it's official now after heated exchanges with the media at the U.S. Open last week, right? When he was saying, how dare you? You're putting a black cloud over the U.S. Open. I'm not thinking about this. It's not an option right now. Yada, yada, lies, lies, lies. Brooks Koepka officially announced his signing with the controversial LIV Tour, is how George put it. And I think that's probably fair. But is anybody really... Hey, George in the house. What's up? Anybody really upset that Brooks Koepka has gone to the LIV Tour? I mean... He goes follows this guy Bryson, right? Can't live without him. And I stole that one from Zara Golf, right? I saw that on Instagram. I thought it was fantastic. They photoshopped Bryson giving Brooks a kiss on the neck. And yeah, Brooks, you know, that look that he had, I believe, was from the U.S. Open last year. But yeah, be gone. Whatever. I just don't want to see too many. Ultimately, I would like to see everybody. It's kind of sad. I'd like to see the competitiveness. I'd like to see everyone together battling it out. But, you know, I'm not... bummed with the players that have left. I think the key guys are still hanging around the tour, and we'll see how this does play out. No Reed, no Brooks, no Bryson. Thank you, he says. And I think we can all agree with that for sure. All right, happy Friday. Lots to get to here on this show. Quick break, and we will dive into some NFL news. Alvin Kamara's in the news, a couple little quick hits, and then we'll bring in our guy, Zach Graham from FTN. Hang tight. Welcome back in. Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network. So a couple of NFL news items before we bring in Zach Graham to dive into the NBA draft from last night. And the biggest is Alvin Kamara. And if you have been following around, I know we've mentioned this a couple times in the show just briefly. Didn't really want to get into it too much from a, you know, a detail standpoint, but there's certainly some off-field issues for Alvin Kamara in Vegas over the offseason. And according to Pro Football Talk, not my favorite Michael Florio. My favorite is from the NFL Network. My former colleague from FNTSY, but Michael Florio of Pro Football Talk had reported that Alvin Kamara is bracing for a suspension of at least 6 games. Selfishly, been trying to trade this guy in dynasty leagues over the past couple months, but nobody is buying it. Alvin Kamara is a complete fade for me in season long because of this stuff. Same sort of deal with DeAndre Hopkins. Like, he's going to miss the first few games of the season because of PED usage. I just don't want to be wrapped up in these guys. Like, who knows, right? Miss some time, come back. Maybe, you know, an injury happens. I don't want to get into too much of this, but it does sound like Alvin Kamara is not going to be around for the Saints. So what does that mean from a best ball standpoint for you? Are you interested in Mark Ingram? You know, last week or a couple weeks ago, they reportedly brought in David Johnson, you know, and that was kind of telling for me, the fact that they brought in David Johnson. You know, the Saints are kind of bracing for this. They want another running back in that backfield. I just don't know how this offense is going to look, you know, with Jameis under center and with no Sean Payton. I don't think it's going to be all that good. I do believe that they want to have a bit of a run-heavy attack with those two guys. I think if you're playing in a best ball league, you know, if you're drafting right now, I think Ingram is okay. But, like, this guy shouldn't be jumping up boards too much. Like, he is going to, of course, with the six-game suspension. But do we really feel like Mark Ingram is going to be a guy that you can play with confidence is like an RB2, I think, okay. Like, he can still catch a couple balls out of the backfield. He was really good with the Saints a few years ago, obviously, but a lot has changed since then. I'm actually looking up his ADP. I thought that I had it, guys. My bad here. He is going as NFFC leagues. I got him up so he's really going to jump up draft boards. His ADP is 275 over the last 6 weeks, right in around other running backs that are kind of going in around that range, like Samaje Perine, who we'll get to actually in a minute, Chuba Hubbard. These are guys that are just not getting drafted. Pierre Strong Jr., you know, this is not, guys aren't getting drafted here. Rex Burkhead, this is not happening. Paris Campbell is a wide receiver that people seem to love in around that range as well. But the min pick is 161 and the max is 401 for Ingram. So I guess if you're drafting now, best ball, you can consider him as like a late round thing, but I don't think that there's a ton of upside. Honestly, I really don't think so. And I suppose, like, if we fast forward into maybe your real drafts in August, yeah, real just like straight up 12 team leagues, 10 team leagues with your buddies, you know, I could see him, you know, definitely rising up as like going as RB 35 or 40. I could see people reaching in that range. I just don't think it's, I don't think it's ideal. Depending on how your draft goes, like if you take a running back in the first round or you hammer home like wide receivers in five of your first six or seven picks, then, you know, you could just kind of shoot for some upside with some other running backs. And maybe like Ingram is a guy that, you know, hey, I'll roll this guy over the first few weeks of the season. Touches and volume in fantasy football is completely a part of the game. You got to get guys that are, volume is king. It really is. But how efficient is Ingram going to be at this point of his career? We'll see. And I'm an Ingram supporter. Believe it or not, I really am. Those that have followed my work when I broke into this industry at Anthem Sports Entertainment, I was a big time supporter of Mark Ingram. He was a top 10 running back a couple years. He suffered some injuries, but from a fantasy point per game standpoint, when he was with the Saints, he was decent at that point. So I mentioned the Cincinnati Bengals Athletic from our guy, Paul Daniel Jr., friend of the show, used to be on the show, just kind of loosely was reporting about Chris Evans, maybe getting some more touches, as you see there, as a potential third round back. He just came out with an article over at The Athletic, and he talked about Joe Mixon's usage, chances like they acquire OBJ, believe it or not, T. Higgins' future. And there was a couple like just mailbag questions, but Paul Daniel Jr. went into it. It's a terrific article. Paul Daniel Jr. is fantastic. I used to work with him at The Athletic. I used to produce his podcast, Hear That Podcast Growling, with him and Jay Morrison, obviously eccentric, just all over the Cincinnati Bengals. But he went through all the games. No one gave everything away, but third down snaps game by game, you know, you could really see the usage at the start of the season for Joe Mixon. For example, like early on in the season, third down snaps week one, like 7 Minnesota, Chicago 9. He had another game against Detroit 9. And then it kind of cooled off. Of course, in the playoffs when it mattered, he was getting some touches and some third down roles, but even like Kansas City 2, Rams 3. So like not a ton. And then, you know, Tennessee for Perine 10, Kansas City 12. Against the Rams 7. So, you know, quick math here, it's like 30 third down snaps for Perine in the playoffs to 7 for Joe Mixon. And I think, you know, everybody in the fantasy community would like to see Joe Mixon be a third down back, but I just, you know, I think it's kind of telling there when the games mattered. He certainly can. He was catching some balls out of the backfield. Like I said, early on in the season, it looked like he was going to be a true bell cow back. You know, Chris Evans is a really good pass catcher. And when Paul Danger Jr. came on the show last year, I asked him about Chris Evans because I know he was talking about him quite a bit. You know, he was making highlight reel catches in practice. You know, he's very elusive. Of course, like protecting Joe Burrow is very key for him to pick up, you know, blitzes and third down blitzes and things like that. But I'm not saying that he should be on your radar, but like if you're drafting deep, deep, deep and you see Piran there, maybe you pass on Piran and you take the upside in a guy like Chris Evans. And then a final news item is out of The Athletic as well. And it is surrounded around Chris Godwin. So Chris Godwin, we've been talking about the Tampa Bay Bucks for, I think, the past couple episodes, of course, with Gronk retiring and then wondering about Cameron Brayde and then, you know, giving some love to Russell Gage and how that offense will look. And I think they'll be just fine. But as you see here, The Athletic reporting Chris Godwin could open up the season on the reserve / pup list. And Tyler, do you have the red zone snaps or the red zone targets? You do, good sir. So FTN Network is a pretty good Twitter handle to follow. I'm completely biased, but we come out with some NFL stats and stats of the day. We had this the other day, just red zone target leaders. Again, just to hammer home Cameron Brayde's usage in the red zone last year. Chris Godwin, of course, led the Bucks. Mike Evans is right there, but Cameron Brayde had more red zone targets than Rob Gronkowski. Maybe a late round pick again. Mark Carr saying last round pick. Absolutely. Best ball, you know, formats underdog. We've went through a couple drafts already. I did one with George where he kind of had a buck stack and we talked about that. If there was no Gronk, Brayde could be a late round pick for you, last round pick, you know, in those two tight end leagues, you know, he's somebody that you can consider. I think if you're playing in a single 10 team, 12 team, you're only rolling out one tight end. He's not going to be on your radar. He's going to go undrafted, but I'm definitely going to be a guy that we talk about from a DFS standpoint. And speaking of DFS, I think we have one of the best DFS players in the house here in the next block. It is Zach Graham, aka Quisenberg DFS. He's going to drop by and we are going to break down the NBA draft from last night. We'll talk about some fantasy relevant just to see if he thinks the Orlando Magic made the right call at number one. We'll be back here on Mean Streets. Keep it locked. Welcome back into Mean Streets here, live on Game Plus Network, our FTN Network YouTube page. Chris Meany, as we bring in the GOAT, Joshua Frick says it, and I agree with it. I agree. It is Zach Graham, a.k.a. Quisenberg DFS on the Twitter machine. We are going to break down the NBA draft. Dude, welcome in. Thanks for taking the time, man.
Thanks for having me, as always, Chris. It's been... I think we talked before the first round of the playoffs, so yes. A lot of stuff has happened in the association since then, and obviously last night was a big night as always.
Yeah, how surprised were you that the Warriors, can we talk about that for a second? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty impressive. What, 4 championships in the last 8 years? Been in the finals 6 times in the last 8 years. You know, they went through some adversity a couple years ago with some injuries and Clay rehabbing and Curry, you know, coming back from an injury. And just, I said it to a buddy of mine when he's just like a big NBA fan. He's just like telling his kids, you know, he's a little bit older and he's just like, man, I was there through the Bulls years. And then, you know, I saw it like your Spurs obviously, you know, had so many significant runs as well. Like just like, he's just like, I can't wait to tell my kids about how great this Warriors team is. And like their favorite again to win the championship. I mean, talk to me a little bit about that run.
I mean, it's, I think a lot of people, myself included, kind of shied away from cheering for this team when Kevin Durant went there from Oklahoma yes. City. And then once he left and went to Brooklyn, and then obviously they had the tough years, 2 years really, where kind of Draymond was the only one that really stayed healthy through that stretch. But the fact that they made great picks, you know, it's not hard to pick James Wiseman at number 2. But then getting Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody and trading for Andrew Wiggins, it's fun for me as somebody who, you know, when I was coaching college, one of my favorite things was recruiting and building a roster. Watching Bob Myers build this roster back up to what it is now, it's a joy to watch. And I think as a basketball fan, you know, even if you're maybe not the biggest Steph Curry fan, I have a couple LeBron fans in my life who really, you know, I think they're worried about people comparing the two legacies, yeah. But it's so fun to watch this team. And also, man, credit Boston because they're not going anywhere. Sure. That team is super young and you know, it was just a great finals in my opinion.
It was, you know, I always say to, you know, learn how to lose before you learn how to win. And, you know, a young team, young coaching staff. And I felt like the experience was definitely there, like later on in the series. I went into the fourth quarter when we did have some tight games. I know there was a lot of blowouts through the NBA playoffs. It just felt like there was some like the unforced turnovers and, you know, Marcus Smart sometimes with the text is getting fired up and just like cool, calm, collected Warriors, right? Apart from Draymond, I was always over the top, but everybody else. I mean, and also I'm a LeBron fan, and how could you not have the respect for Steph? I mean, it is, he finally gets his MVP and he overtook, I mean, game four was pivotal and he had a big play in just a huge game four. I thought it was fantastic. But before we wrap up from the Warriors, you're right. I mean, I think it left a bit of a sour taste in the mouth of many basketball fans when KD went over there. But ultimately, like, you see so many teams trying to create super teams through free agencies and trades, and the Warriors just drafted so well, right? What could you say? I mean, Draymond and Clay and Curry, and then you mentioned some other players in there that they drafted as well. So good stuff in there. Let's talk about this draft. And we have the board here of the top 15. I just want to start up at the top with those three picks. You know, I saw that Waz tweeted out what he thought was going to be his three. And then here north of the border, I saw FanDuel Sportsbook. Ben Caro actually went up to like 9-1 to be the first overall pick. I think it was like minus 1,000 before the tweet. Wild stuff. And then Chet Holmgren there at number two. OKC, obviously busy. You see them on the board here three times. And then Jabari Smith. Let's just talk about those three. Is it how you thought it would play out? Do you feel like Orlando made the right choice? Like, what do you think?
So I guess, first of all, I'll say shout out to the folks on the gambling, the DFS Twitter yesterday, who were just hammering the Ben Caro. And I thought it was going to be Jabari Smith. I thought that for a few weeks. I thought all signs, you know, the odds certainly pointed to that. You mentioned Woj coming out yesterday morning saying, well, the top three's kind of set, and then it turns out to not be the case. But I actually thought they still, for, you know, it's tough to say with any of these top three guys that any team screwed it up. But to me, Chet Holmgren was the guy in this draft. And we'll talk about Oklahoma City in a second. But I don't envy the position that the Magic were in here, because over the last few years, they've had, you know, so many lottery picks, maybe more than anybody else in the league. And their roster is chock full of this talent that is really unrealized at this point, almost at every position. So I don't think they could really go wrong. But me personally, I thought Chet is the player with the highest upside on both ends. Both, you know, the long-term upside, I think, is there. I'm not super worried about him physically, where a lot of people, you know, you see this hunched over, long and lanky, and let's just be honest, long and lanky white guy, people just don't really look at somebody like that and say, okay, here's an all-time player. But I really do think that Chet has that type of upside, because obviously he is a fantastic rim protector, but a little over 7 feet tall, can handle the ball, above average passing ability, and can step out and shoot the three. I think he was like 39%, albeit at a low-ish clip at Gonzaga. But the fact that somebody like that can step out and spread the floor and put the ball on the deck, to me, he was the pick. And so I actually like the Thunder and what they did, not just with Chet. But you look down at 11, Usman Jang, a French player, played in New Zealand last year for the Breakers. I actually had him mocked to my Spurs at 9, and I had Jeremy Sochan, who my Spurs ended up taking, going to OKC. So whenever Sam Presti likes somebody that my team got, or vice versa, I feel pretty good about it. So adding Jang with Chet Holmgren there, kind of the 4-5 combo. I don't know if you've seen any Jang, but this guy can guard 1-4. The second half of his season out there in Australia was much more efficient on the offensive end. And 6'10", legit 6'10". So I think with those two guys, OKC was one of my big winners. And then maybe the losers up there in Oklahoma City are the media members, because you see Jalen Williams there at 12. They also drafted Jalen Williams at 34, just a slight difference in the first name spelling there of Jalen. So good luck to anybody who's trying to parse between those two guys, especially at Summer League coming up next week. But I thought Oklahoma City was probably, you know, without, I do think my Spurs had a good draft, but I don't want to be too heavy with the homerism here. I really like what the Thunder did.
Yeah, I was typing out the names for George last night. I was like, man, there's a lot of J's in here. Jalen's and Jabari, all these guys, a ton of J's last night. I just want to go back up to the top of the board for a second. Those people who are playing like maybe season-long basketball or like Dynasty. I agree with you that I feel like Chet has the highest ceiling. I think he's the most skilled. Like if you were just doing a rookie-only draft and you're thinking long-term fantasy basketball, would he be the number one pick for you in a rookie in a dynasty league?
For me, he is, just because I think he's going to contribute in all five categories. And I think like when you're going into your rookie drafts this year for dynasty, the top three guys in this draft are probably going to be in some order, the top three guys that go in your dynasty draft. But then once we get past those top three, similar to the draft last night, I kind of think it's wide open. And Chris, like, the guy I would take, I think, Jaden Ivey is a fine pick, and I mm-hmm. thought he should have gone four to the Kings. And, you know, we knew the Kings were going to do something on brand. Kings, right? Just has everybody typing Kangs on Twitter in all caps. But Shaedon Sharpe, right, Canadian guy, back-to-back Canadians there in Ben Mathurin and Shaedon Sharpe. I think Shaedon Sharpe is the guy out of the kind of the 4-7 range that just has, from a just pure raw talent standpoint, the most upside. And I thought it was the perfect pick for the Blazers, who, outside of Damian Lillard, right, they didn't do the full teardown last year, but keeping Lillard, but they have kind of need at every other position, and getting Shaedon Sharpe there on the wing, I think, could really pay off for them at seven when we look back at this draft in a few years.
Yeah, I was going to bring up those Canadians. Of course, we are north of the border, and you mentioned Mathurin and Sharpe there back-to-back. And the last time we saw two Canadians go inside the top 10 was 2014. You mentioned Wiggins and then Stauskas as well. So those two guys inside the top 10 a few years ago. Since we're on Canadians, I will ask you about Christian Koloko out of Arizona. Toronto picked him at 33. You know, they don't have a ton of bigs. There's some people who say that, you know, they maybe – you know, a lengthy center doesn't really kind of fit into what Nick Nurse does defensively, but man, I think it's exactly what they needed, you know, some length. What do you make of that pick, and what do you think he'll, you know, give the Raptors?
I actually thought Koloko could have been a first round pick. So I think they got some good value there, and it gives, I always preach it, man. Trust in Masai. Masai Ujiri is one of my favorite executives in the league. And for him to get that size and that length to bolster the front court depth, it gives him a little bit of, for lack of a better term, right, house money to play with in, free agencies coming up a week from today. And I think Toronto could be active in the trade market. We've heard rumors about not only Pascal Siakam, who I think could fetch clearly another all-star and maybe then some, because he's still very young. And OG Anunoby was in trade rumors yesterday. So I think Precious Achiuwa now is very expendable because you have Koloko there. So I think that's a team to watch, to be sure, going into free agency next week. And then, you know, that really plays out over about a 2-week period. I think we were here last year, Chris, talking about how the Raptors were going into this rebuild mode, and yeah. It lasted, 3 months? You get Scottie Barnes in there, and all of a sudden this team is contending for a playoff spot and all that. So I think the future is bright for Toronto, for sure. And Koloko is going to be a part of that.
Yeah. Daily Handle saying the issue of Koloko is very one-dimensional, though limited offensively. But, the development that the Raptors have shown, I don't think anybody thought Scottie Barnes is really going to have the season that he had, too. I mean, that kind of just came a little bit out of left field. So the Knicks, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Knicks with you because, you know, Kemba Walker, the trade, and then they move out of that spot, was 11, and they get like three firsts. And now there's reports. It does look like the writing is kind of on the wall that Brunson is going to go there. I mean, they just hired his dad as like an assistant coach. I want to just get your thoughts on the direction of this squad. What do you think they'll do in free agency? And man, we really did see at times when Luka was out of the lineup, man, Brunson, I mean, I know you talk about a lot in DFS, like he had a really good opening round against Utah. Is he like, where would you, I know I don't want to put you on the spot and like rank this guy, but do you think he could be like, a true starting point guard, like an actual, I don't want to say top tier stud, but like definitely serviceable for the, I don't know. I'll let you go. What do you think?
Serviceable, sure. Top tier, no.
He's going to get overpaid a little bit, right?
Absolutely. And I think for, you know, you with your Mavs fandom, I think you shouldn't be happy to see Jalen Brunson leave, because he's an important piece and a good piece, I think, for any franchise. But he's just going to command a salary that I don't think Dallas, certainly when you're building around Luka, who needs the ball in his hands. I don't think that he is somebody that the Mavs should really invest in long term. And I don't think it's the Knicks really knocking it out of the park if that's who they're maneuvering for here. Certainly better than what they had last year with Kemba Walker and obviously D Rose, still very serviceable off the bench, right, when he can stay healthy. So I think it's fine. I know Knicks fans want them to go after Kyrie. I have a very similar, that's fine type of reaction to that too, just because Kyrie Irving has really been, in my opinion, been kind of coasting off that shot he hit back in 2017 or whatever it was in the finals, which is one of the most important shots in NBA history. But what has he done for these franchises, Boston and Brooklyn, since then? It's not much. No. So I do think I wanted the Knicks to, from an outsider's perspective, take AJ Griffin. I thought pairing him and RJ Barrett, those fellow Duke Blue Devils on the wing, would be just lethal from outside and really open up the lane for guys like Obi Toppin, who needs more time out on the court. And it's going to be, I think, a tug of war between the front office and Coach Tom Thibodeau on, can we actually get these young guys the time that they need, so we can see, do we actually have something here, or do we need to, you know, go through another teardown? Which, you know, you saw the Stephen A tweet with Spike Lee consoling him last night. It was, I mean, have we ever seen something like that with the Duren pick, and then he's getting shipped? Woj says he's going to Detroit, and Sham says he's going to Charlotte. And I saw Jake, somebody else, I apologize for not remembering this writer's name, but he was like, I'm going to bed. I'm sure he's going somewhere. So that was one of the most wildest points of the draft, when that odd three-way trade was going down.
Let's be honest, Kyrie doesn't know what the heck he wants, man. This guy, he doesn't know. I think he's a huge gamble, whatever team gets him. Do you think he's on a new team, though?
I think there's where there's smoke, there's fire, right? And that's cliche to say, but kind of all signs have been pointing towards this falling apart over the last month or two. And I mean, again, like you said, Kyrie doesn't know what he wants. 3-4 months ago, he was saying that him and KD were like best friends in a past life, so that's why this works here. And like, now it all falls apart. You talked about super teams earlier. It doesn't seem like that is really the way to go anymore in the NBA, or at the very least, over a long period of time, right? Even the KD Warriors fell apart over, what, 3 seasons? Like, it doesn't seem like teams like this work out much longer than that.
He definitely, man, he had something good, I think, in Cleveland with LeBron. I mean, eventually LeBron, maybe he doesn't leave, or he was going to leave, and he's going to leave Kyrie. And I think that was reported at the time. And Kyrie's like, no, he's going to leave anyways. So, you know, I'm going to go to my own team. But, man, they had something special. I wanted to see another go, Cleveland and Golden State there. Let's bring up this board one more time before we get you out of here. So we talked about, you know, just from a dynasty standpoint and the top of the board, if you can bring this up, Tyler, just 15. Is there another guy that's maybe underrated here that you feel like, hey, maybe people should have in the dynasty, you know, on their dynasty draft list, or, you know, keeper league, or just like somebody you think, man, this is a guy that I feel like we'll be talking about in DFS. You know, opportunity is huge in DFS, and, you know, you don't see a ton of rookies really, you know, ball out right off the hop. But, man, I like Abaji in there, Cleveland, too. It's just, I'm a Jayhawks guy, so I just like that guy. But is there anybody on this list that you didn't touch on that maybe you would like to? Is this like an underrated sleeper type dude?
I'll go rapid fire here, Chris. Abaji, I thought, was a great pick for the Cavaliers, for what they need. I mean, the fact that he went through so many big games with the Jayhawks, I think we expect the Cavaliers to be playing in some very important games, some playoff series going forward. And I think his you know, experience in college on the big stage is really going to help him transition quickly to the NBA game. You know, it wouldn't be a Zach Graham appearance if I didn't get a little homerism in here. Sohan is a great pick at number 9. Branham at 20, I like. Not a huge fan of Wesley at 25, but I'll trust in the front office there. The Spurs do a pretty good job drafting over the last few years. And then I'll say maybe not Dyson Daniels at eight. It didn't really blow my socks off, but David Griffin with the Pelicans over the last 6 months has been working magic. And I thought they got one of the best values in the draft down at what I thought was, I think, the 41st pick with EJ Liddell. That what they did in the draft combined with what they did at the trade deadline, bringing in CJ McCollum and Larry Nance and all those pieces that they did. I like the Pelicans going forward. And then I'll also give Dallas some credit there. Jaden Hardy at 37 is perfect. I think just they need some scoring off the bench, and I think he's going to provide it to him. He slipped way too far, and props to Dallas for going out and getting him at 37.
I was going to bring him up. I didn't want to be a complete homer, but you did it for me anyway. I absolutely love it. You know, we gave Pelicans. I don't feel like the Pelicans are a championship squad, but if you're looking at like a sprinkle, I saw they were 40-1. Like, just such an intriguing team, right? Obviously, Zion has a lot to do with that. We'll see what happens in the future. But, dude, I love getting together with you. I always feel like I just learned so much listening to you talk basketball. So let's do it again. Maybe, you know, when free agency kind of, you know, unravels and, you know, certain players jump around, maybe we'll touch on some NBA futures. Kweisberg DFS, an absolute amazing follow, knows his basketball stuff. Thank you so much, dude. We're going to switch gears and we're going to talk about game five tonight on the ice. Got some props and some picks. Keep her locked. Welcome back in, Mean Streets here on Game Plus Network. I missed that question, Joshua. I really like that one. Is a good one. Ask Zach if he thinks John Collins is going to be a good Spur. Yeah, I do believe John Collins is on the way out. We'll see where he lands. And Mark, definitely following Zach now. I mean, guy's so sharp. He really is, man. He knows the game inside out. And if you play a little bit of NBA DFS, you are well aware of what he can bring to the table. A couple years ago, he came on this show and he called the Bucks to win the championship when nobody else was really calling the Bucks. Nobody was calling them. Now, I will say he had the Clippers, and he'll tell you that straight up. He had the Clippers in the finals as well, but he called the Bucks, and everyone was like, nah, you know, Giannis, you know, everyone just always says that, you know, a team always chokes in the playoffs until they finally win, and he was on it. So good on him. A great follow, Mark and Daily Handle, and Joshua is well aware, I believe, of Zach Graham. So tonight, Game 5, Stanley Cup Finals. I do believe it's all over tonight for Tampa. Again, what I said off the top, selfishly would love to see this go six or seven games. It's going to be a fantastic game the way that it finished. You know, there was a little bit of controversy in there. Tampa's going to really bring it. But the way that Colorado has played on home ice, I think, you know, a goal in the first 10 minutes is absolutely in play. The Avs scored two in game one in the first 10 minutes. They did the same thing in game two as well. It's really tough to get behind this number, minus 190. But if you want to chuck in Colorado, maybe the over six, I do believe the over will hit. It's hit in every single game but one. We didn't get there in the last game, but there were several posts. It felt like it was just honestly a bit of a bad beat. I am on Colorado, but there's some value here with some props, and I got a lot of props here for you, just because it could be the last time we could talk NHL. I don't want it to be, but this could be the last NHL game of the season, so I'm just coming at you guys with a bunch of props. Let's start here, Tyler, with this single board. You know, Cale Makar is juiced up, but maybe, you know, parlay him in there with a couple baseball props. FanDuel maybe plus three shots for Cale Makar. These two guys alone, right? 30 shot attempts in the last game between them. They have 88 shot attempts in the four games. You know, Makar is playing more than anybody. He's generating so much offense. And even in game one where he had no shots, he had 9 shot attempts. So these are the guys up at the top. Victor Hedman, same sort of deal, right? He's been clearing consistently in the playoffs. And in this series, he's looked really good. I thought his best game in the series was in game four. He's trying to generate a little bit more offense from the back end with no Braden Point. So I like the over 2.5. And you get it at a decent price, too. I don't know why Hedman is not, you know, juiced up here. Valerie Nichushkin for a point. Mikko Rantanen for an assist. He's up to like 20-some-odd assists here in the playoffs. He's got an assist in every game here in this series. And I believe he's got 8 helpers already. So I'm in on him. And then Andre Palat has been pretty consistent from a point standpoint. He has hit the score sheet in, I believe, 14 of his last 18 games, 18 or 19 games. So he's been right there as well. It's tough to get behind the single props, especially for the shot props. It really is. I think if you're looking for some value, I expect there to be some goals. You got Rant in there for an assist. Maybe you can get McKinnon for an assist. Gabriel Landeskog is plus money for an assist. You know, Nichushkin is plus money for an assist. I would look that way. I think Hedman and Kucherov could also get on the score sheet when it comes to assists. And then I got a couple others. I just why not throw it at you guys? Like Anthony Cirelli, 1.5 shots. He's had at least 2 shots in 9 of 11. Corey Perry played 17 minutes the other night in game 3, was the most ice time that he's received in the playoffs. He's cleared 1.5 shots in 3 straight games to get some power play time as well. He had 3, 4, and 2 in his last 3 games. These guys, you know, are decent single bets for props, but I got some parlays here, and 2 of them are from FanDuel. Tyler, if you want to chuck this up. So you see on the left, this is plus 312. This is just 2 plus shots. You see they're so juiced, right? Kucherov minus 520, Nichushkin minus 520. But Nichushkin was really dominant on home ice in the first couple games. I know he burned us guys in that third game. I still like thought it was the right play. The shot attempts were there. And then he had the 2 shots in the first period early, right? When you needed one more from game 3, he got it, you know, early in game 4. But you see there, Cirelli, Perry, Nichushkin, and then Kucherov. All of these guys have 2 plus shots, pays 3-1. And then the right one here, again, FanDuel, Cale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon, Victor Hedman. Those are my guys. The shot attempts have been there for these 3 guys consistently in the first 4 games of the Stanley Cup Finals. Look how juiced they are, especially MacKinnon, 3 plus shots. But that pays out plus 190. If you're looking to get a little crazier, you can go Makar, MacKinnon, and Hedman, maybe 4 plus shots. I put that like 0.25 units, but that's where I'm at. Those are my players here tonight. Enjoy the hockey, and I hope that we're talking about Game 7, I guess, when we return on Monday, but I don't know. And if you do feel like the Bolts are going to come back, I believe they're 8-1 to win the Cup. Vasilevskiy's like 20-1 to win the Conn Smythe. So if you do feel strong about Tampa and you don't want to count out the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champs, maybe a little sprinkle on Vasilevskiy to win Conn Smythe as opposed to Tampa to win the Stanley Cup. Just more worth your buck there. Okay, we got Buffalo Bills talk in here to round out Mean Streets. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back in. Let's talk about the Buffalo Bills. I was like, who are we talking about here? The Buffalo Bills, the team with the best odds to win the Super Bowl, 7-1. Saw some 6-1, but, you know, prop shop, free parlay calculator, get those best possible odds. You can get 7-1 in some spots. 4-1 to win the AFC. Heavy favorites to win the AFC East. And then the win total, 11.5. They won 11 games last year. I really do believe that they're like a 12 or 13 win team. I like the over on that. Like, their schedule starts with the Rams. That's a tough one, right? In LA, opening to start off the new season, Thursday night football. I will give the benefit of the doubt to the Rams to win that game, but I don't think anybody would be shocked if the Bills won. They'll probably be like plus money. I think it'll probably be like a sneaky little bet for them to get that W in a dome week 1. But after that, it kind of opens up like Tennessee week 2, W, Miami, I think W, Baltimore could be a tough one. I'll give them the win there. So we're at 3, Pittsburgh win 4, going to Kansas City, October 16th. Shout out the birthday. Wow, maybe I'll watch that one, you know, in Kansas City. Psych. I give them a loss there. Let's give them a loss, even though I do like their squad. I think they can go back and, you know, kind of rebound there. But we'll give them a loss. I got them at 1, 2, 3, 4 wins here. Green Bay out of the bye. That's a W5. Jets win 6. Minnesota win 7. Cleveland win 8. Detroit win 9. New England win 10. Jets win 11. Miami, maybe we can give Miami, maybe we'll give them benefit of the doubt that Miami wins one of those 2 games against them. We're still at 11. And then Bears in Chicago, there's 12. In Cincinnati, maybe we say the Bengals win that one. And then they wrap up against the Pats at home. There's another W, right? I think they're a 12 or 13 win team. The AFC is really, really tough. There's a lot of really good teams in there. I mean, I'm not breaking any news, right? I think there's more value if you're looking for a Super Bowl bet to pick a team like the Rams or the Bucks, because they just have such a clearer path. But the key for Buffalo, you're going to have maybe for them to have that home field advantage. Instead of going into Kansas City for that AFC championship game, maybe they're just playing at home in Buffalo. It's a very tough place to play. Cold weather, and I think Josh Allen has definitely made some strides, right? He's made some improvements as we can switch in. Let's keep talking about the Bills here, Tyler, and go to their fantasy, you know, outlook here for some of their players, and we'll wrap up maybe with the MLB prop or two. So, you know, Josh Allen, quarterback 1 each of the last 2 seasons, ADP of 25. It's not in my nature to draft a quarterback that early. I don't think he's going to be a bust. I think he's going to be great. I just don't feel like that's just not my strategy. I don't like to take a quarterback. If it's a single quarterback league, I just don't like to do it that early. You're playing best ball. You want to have Allen. You want to pair him up with Diggs. You want to get Gabriel Davis in there. Jameson Crowder, a new addition to the squad. you know, you can do that. You can get Crowder pretty late. He's basically free right now. I know he doesn't have a great track record in terms of health, but when he's healthy, he's very productive. I think he's better than Cole Beasley. I think he can get into the slot and rack up a few catches. You know, I think he's a decent late round pick. I'll say that. I'm not into Singletary. I'm not into James Cook. You know, they drafted Cook. I don't think Singletary's all that great of a pass catcher. We just know that Josh Allen does like to call his own number inside the red zone. He's very productive. I would like to see the Bills maybe drop back from having him have so many design runs, but I just think it's in his nature. Eventually, he's going to have to cool it, right? Just a little bit. He shouldn't be running around. He's got to protect himself. But ultimately, the Bills tried to get J.D. McKissic. It looked like they were going to get him, and they couldn't get him, and then they drafted James Cook. So it's just really tough to get behind drafting a running back. I think Singletary's okay to have a share or two. Again, best ball, you can make a case for a lot of players, but in, you know, your redraft leagues, I think with your buddies, 12 teams, I'm just not really interested. It's tough to kind of gauge. I think Diggs is a top five wideout. I'm still kind of back and forth if I would rather him than Ja'Marr Chase. Like Cooper Kupp for sure for me, Justin Jefferson. And then like I'm thinking, you know, there's going to be more volume for Diggs. He's going to get more targets. Offense is just as good, if not better. In Cincinnati, there's Boyd, there's Higgins, there's Chase, there's year two of teams trying to adjust on Chase. He was very efficient through the air. Like there's a lot of deep touchdown passes. I think those will continue to happen. But I think, you know, Diggs is, I think he's, for projection wise, he's certainly going to get more targets and he's probably going to get more catches, over 100 catches last year. And Chase was in that 80 range. We're splitting hairs, but I think that Diggs is a really good target. And I'm out on Dawson Knox. I think he's fine. I just that tight end range, this is not really for me. I don't mind Pitts and Andrews that early. And then I'll probably just wait it out, right? I'll just kind of avoid that tier there with Knox and Goddard. And, you know, I really like Cole Kmet. I'm kind of in on Cole Kmet. I think he's a pretty good target. I'll probably leave a lot of my drafts there with Cole Kmet. But Superflex, I think Allen's a pretty good, like Superflex is going to go first round. Dynasty startup, Superflex dynasty startup, I think he's a pretty good pick and he's going to go inside the top five picks as well. I don't think it's the end of the world if you leave, you know, a Superflex league with Josh Allen as your quarterback. But the Bills should be in for a really, really good season. And I think they will get to the Super Bowl this year. I think they will get there. I don't think they're going to win. I think they're going to get there though. We're going to wrap up with the MLB prop, but 30-40 second prop here to round up Meat Streets. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back in one final time. We only got about 30 seconds or here or so. Alex Cobb, 4.5 strikeouts is plus money against Cincinnati. They have a strikeout rate inside the top 15. You know, Cobb's last start didn't get a lot of strikeouts, but before that, he was easily clearing this. He's got a 10K per nine. I expect him to go 6 or 7 here against Miami, and he's plus money for the 5 strikeouts. I like that. And Taijuan Walker recently has been striking out some guys. He was pitching to contact, but he's got 19 punchouts here in his last 2 games, a matchup against Miami. He's about minus 125 over at DraftKings. Those are 2 strikeout props that I like, and we're going to have a whole lot more in our FTN bet tracker as well. Have a fantastic weekend. Go Bolts? I don't know. We'll talk to you on Monday. Cheers.